Welcome to Our Story, Your Story, the video podcast where we share our personal experiences and invite you to share yours. We are Toby Eunice and Shelley Carney, and together we'll take you on a journey through our lives and the lives of our family, friends, and guests. We believe that everyone has a story to tell, and we can all learn from each other's experiences. So whether you're looking for inspiration, entertainment, or simply a good story, you've come to the right place. Hello and welcome to Our Story, Your Story. I'm Shelley Carney.
And I'm Toby Eunice. Thanks for joining us. I was reading your notes.
Sorry. Yes. Toby Eunice is here as well. Okay. So today we're diving back into A Gypsy's Kiss, A Treasure Hunt Adventure. This is the book that Toby and I wrote in 2020. And it's based on a story that Toby has told many times throughout his life because he lived it. There are some embellishments. There are some stories that we added into the journey that actually happened at a different time. But when you're putting together a book or a script or anything like that, you tend to condense things into a short amount of time so that you can tell story after story after story that occurs on one journey. Now, in this particular journey, we are joining Miguel, who's Toby's middle name is Michael, and he's known as Miguel in this story. We join Miguel. He is staying overnight with the Boltons. Ranger Bolton is based on somebody he knew in his life, Bucky McGee, who was a ranger, and his wife, Catherine, who is Kate in this story, and John Bolton. And we choose the name Bolton because it was a popular name in the area of Louisiana that we're talking about. He spent the night, and they get up the next morning, and they have an adventure. And that's what today's story, chapter 23, Lost Boys, is all about.
I do want to point what the expectation. His expectation was that he was going to spend the night, say thank you, and get back on his trip to New Orleans. So,
right. So as we left him, he was having a dream about bears chasing him through the woods. And then he woke up. It's Fat Tuesday. The Boltons make breakfast noises in the kitchen. Not wanting to miss one of Kate's meals, I dress and quickly go through my morning routine. Breakfast. A big stack of pancakes and a platter of sausage and bacon is on the table. Good morning, says Kate. How'd you sleep? She sets a pot of coffee on a large tile in the middle of the table. There's fresh milk in the fridge if you care for it. Milk with a stack of buttery, syrupy pancakes and a side of sausage reminds me of the Tuesday-Thursday breakfasts the cafeteria ladies make for us at St. Mike's. Kate and John are sitting and enjoying their food by the time I get back to the table with my glass of milk. John is answering Kate's question about his plans for the day. He tells her that the regional office let him know that a Boy Scout troop was reported missing on Monday morning, and this morning they told him they were in his district. He says that it's not the first time a Boy Scout troop has been reported missing, and so far all the cases have turned out well. Kate asks me, how about you, Miguel? What's your plan for the day? I'm ahead of schedule. I want to make sure I reach New Orleans by this evening, and I've got the whole day to get there. I figure I'm about 4 hours away. That's about right, says John. You a scout? I am, I tell him. I'm hoping to get my Eagle Scout badge this summer. You know how to ride a horse? I spent most of my summers at the family ranch in northern New Mexico, riding and helping the working cowboys herding cattle. I learned a lot from them, including how to cuss, which made for some interesting and sometimes volatile conversations at the dinner table when I returned home before the beginning of the school year. Yes, I do. I'm going to saddle up and ride northwest to see if I can locate those scouts. You're welcome to join me if you think you have the time. Seeing that I'm thinking about it, Kate says, but we understand if you feel the need to get on with your ride. I'm on this journey to experience life and adventures. Surely this detour will provide both. Plus, I can repay the generosity these kind people have shown me. I have the whole day to get down to New Orleans. I'd like to help out. Great, John exclaims. When we're done with breakfast, John and I follow Kate to the sink, planning to help her clean up. You two go ahead. I'll take care of it, she tells us. John gives her a kiss on the cheek and tells her, we'll be back around lunch. Then he says to me, let's get those horses saddled. The morning air is crisp, fresh, and sweet-smelling, but dense with humidity. It's very different from the cool, dry forests in northern New Mexico. Why horses and not a truck? I asked John. Most of the route is an off-road, narrow trail, and some of it is a big marsh. Eventually, we'd need the horses, so we'd have to trailer them anyway. This'll be easier and just as quick. In the barn, John introduces me to Bucky, a healthy-looking, roan-colored, and dish-faced Arabian, perfect for the trail riding I expect we'll do. Any reason for the name? I ask, worried that Bucky might have a reputation. John, quickly figuring out why I'm asking, laughs and says, see that lightning-shaped blaze on his forehead? I have a ranger friend that works up in your neck of the woods, Bucky McGee. He's survived being struck by lightning 7 times. I named this horse after my friend. He's a good horse. You'll be fine. I'm just barely tall enough to toss the saddle over Bucky's back. So, like the cowboys on the ranch, John gives me a hand. The four of us are ready in about a half hour. So John goes inside the cabin and returns with 2 canteens, a scoped bolt action rifle, and a big military-grade two-way radio, the kind I've seen in movies about World War II. He hands me 1 canteen, slips the rifle into a sheath on the right side of his horse's saddle, and slings the two-way radio over his shoulder so it rests on his back. Kate tells me the regional office called and said they're sending us some reinforcements to help with the search, but they won't be here until later in the morning. So let's get a head start and we'll radio our location back to them. As we mount our horses and turn them toward the forest road, Kate comes out on the cabin porch and says, you two be careful. We promise her we will. John tells her he'll call her on the radio with updates. We ride for nearly 3 hours, occasionally stopping to water the horses at clear-running springs along the side of the road or trail. While riding, we exchange stories of our respective pasts, John telling me that he always wanted to be a forest ranger and that he was lucky to find Kate, who is a fine outdoors person herself. They love the life they live. Keeping things simple makes both feel free and content. The morning gets progressively warmer and more humid as we ride. Used to it, the horses hold up well. Then, into our 3rd hour of the ride, John spots a plume of white smoke off in the distance. He reaches behind him and retrieves a pair of binoculars from his saddlebag and brings them up to his eyes. Yep, that looks like them. They're inside the wilderness area, and it's a maze of game trails in there. You've got to be a pretty good orienteer to make your way in and out of there. He hands me the binoculars to give me a look while he slides the two-way radio from his back to his front. He flicks the on-off toggle switch and gives it time to warm up while he unfolds the antenna. Bringing it up to his head, he presses the transmit bar and says, Kate, this is John. Over. He gives Kate enough time to respond before trying again. Kate, this is John. Over. Nothing. He tries a couple more times before concluding that we are out of range of the cabin. He folds the antenna before sliding the radio around to his back. I hand the binoculars back to him. Well, seems to me we've got a sticky wicket here. How do you feel about riding back to the cabin on your own? He asks. I'm good with it. I'm patting Bucky on the neck, as long as he is. He'll be fine, John replies. I need you to ride back to the cabin. The other rangers should be there by the time you arrive. Tell them to order the Bell 47 helicopter up toward Pine Bluff Wilderness, and then send the rescue vehicles around to the east, and I'll lead the scouts to Grand Meadow below the lake. Bell 47 helicopter, Pine Bluff Wilderness. rescue vehicles to the east, Grand Meadow below the lake, I repeat, memorizing his instructions. You got it? John asks me. Yes, sir, I reply, excited to be part of the rescue team. Tell them to keep trying to reach me by radio, and I'll guide them in as they close the distance. Anything else? I ask. Nope, get going. Ride fast but safe, okay? Yes, sir. Gently pulling the reins to our left, Bucky turns. With a slap on his rear and a change in my riding position, he recognizes, he quickly gets up to trail-friendly pace. With a little encouragement, he speeds up as we reach the wider, smoother forest road. Letting him lead us back, I repeat the important elements of John's directions. Bell 47, Pine Bluff Wilderness, Grand Meadow below the lake. It takes us less than half the time to get back to the cabin. Before I can climb down from my horse, Kate, holding her hand over her eyes to shade them from the sun, calls out, Miguel, where's John? There are a dozen rangers, along with several four-wheel drive vehicles in the yard surrounding the cabin. A couple of the rangers are tending to horses that have already been saddled. I climb down just as another older ranger joins us. He's fine, Kate. He located the scouts, and he sent me back with some instructions for the rescue team. Kate turns to the older ranger next to her and says, Jeff, this is the young man I was telling you about. He reaches out to shake my hand. Pleased to meet you, son. What's the word from John? He located the scout troop. He saw a plume of smoke coming from the Pine Bluff Wilderness. He tried to radio back, but we were out of range. He said he was going to guide them back to the Grand Meadow below the lake and to send the helicopter up in that direction. Then send the team and their vehicles around to the east. Ranger Jeff puts his hand on my shoulder and says, Well done, young man. He then asks one of the other rangers for a radio. I hear him call the chopper and give them instructions on how to reach John. Handing Bucky's reins to yet another ranger, he says, Sam, we don't need the horses. You and Tom put them up. Make sure Bucky here gets watered and fed. He's had a busy morning. Before Bucky gets away, I give him some pats and rubs on his blaze and say, Good boy. He dips his head in response. Ranger Jeff asks me if I want to ride out with the team. I glance at my watch, wondering if I still have time to help and make it to Mardi Gras. Noticing my concern, Kate says, He's trying to get to New Orleans before the end of the day. No worries, I understand. And turning back to me, he says, Thank you for your... I want to go back with you. I politely interrupt him. This is a guaranteed adventure I don't want to miss. Well, let's get going then. Ranger Jeff turns to the others and shouts, Saddle up, boys. We're headed for Grand Meadow. And to me, he says, You ride with me in the lead truck. Hearing the distant womp womp of spinning blades, we all look up at the helicopter flying overhead in John's direction. Kate gives me a pat on the back and says, Heck, a couple more of these and we may keep you around. She has no idea how much those words mean to me. The rest of the early afternoon is spent meeting up with John and the scouts at Grand Meadow, all of whom are dirty, tired, hungry, and thirsty. One of the scout leaders is belted into the wire litter on the outside of the helicopter and flown to a hospital in Baton Rouge. John tells me it's a precaution and not an emergency. We all return to the cabin by about 3 p.m. Kate is ready for us and serves up a big pot of creamy soup and thick slices of warm homemade bread. The rangers re-rig their trucks and head out one at a time. Soon after, a school bus arrives to take the scouts back to Baton Rouge. I busy myself collecting my gear and rigging up the beezer, getting it ready for the road. Seeing me standing next to the bike with my gloves and jacket on and my goggles around my neck, Kate and John walk over to me. John extends his hand. Thanks for your help, Miguel. As far as I'm concerned, you made Eagle Scout today. Boy Scouting has been really important to me, and anything I can do to pay that back, I'm happy to do it. I would never want those boys to feel abandoned. I looked down the road where the bus full of scouts had gone. Abandoned? Kate says. No, never that, John replies. I can see that you wouldn't abandon anyone, John. I admire your commitment to your work, I say. Oh, and thanks again for saving me from that bear, I add, smiling. Kate hands me a brown bag and says, there's a couple of peanut butter and homemade strawberry jam sandwiches in there for you, and a couple of oatmeal cookies as well. They're fresh made this morning. I open the bag and take a whiff of the baked treats. She leans in to give me a hug and says, you take care, okay? John hands me my canteen and says, it's filled. You ride safe and come back and visit if you get a chance. The service hires interns for the summer months, if you're interested. He hands me one of his business cards. Taking it, I say, I'm committed this coming summer, but summer after next, I'll let you know. Good, he says sincerely. I put my cap on and start up the bike. I wave at them and they return it. Then I ride out of the forest and southeast toward New Orleans. I have about 3 hours to get to Mardi Gras. Well, that was an adventure.
An adventure within an adventure.
That was one of our longer chapters, I think. Uh-huh,
yeah.
But some of the themes and emotions that are in this are, I also kind of put on the thumbnail for this episode, selfless duty, because we talk in the chapter about how Miguel is like, I really, really want to get to Mardi Gras, but this is also an adventure. And I can help kids, you know, who are like you were a few years ago when you were in Scouts. So you can put yourself in their place, or they're like your younger brothers, mm-hmm. and you think about them and how you, you know, would be worried about them if they were lost. And you put yourself in their place and say, I want to help. I want to make sure that they get found. That's just slightly more important here than me getting to go to a party.
So I think it's in the context of the objective of the whole trip was to get to the party.
Right.
Now, I don't think he actually saw it in that way. I don't think that it was, I'm going to a party.
Yeah.
I'm going to Mardi Gras, I believe, as I look back on it, Mardi Gras was the excuse. Right. It had been talked about, and it had always been talked about in the most, you know, interesting of terms. It was never, even the Christian Brothers never saw it as, you know, drunk people, you know, playing games or whatever. They never talked about it in a negative way, that it was fun. Mm-hmm. And after all, it was a precursor to the celebration of the Lenten season. Mm-hmm. So it was always in that perspective that they presented it. So I don't think it was necessarily, you know, and I'm going to repeat myself here. I don't think it was necessarily as much the idea of a party as it was to experience the experience, mm-hmm. right? Experience Mardi Gras. Yeah. At the same time, he's stuck with these, well, I don't want to say stuck, that's probably the wrong word. He's encountered these two individuals that you can tell he admires, that he would aspire, you know, that's the kind of life I want. That's the kind of dad I want. That's the kind of mom I want, you know. Mm-hmm. Not that they were probably old enough for him. I don't think, maybe they could have. They would have had to have happened when they were in their 20s, probably. But I think that was enough. The emotions he was experiencing was enough to say, well, you know what? I can do this if I'm a little bit late. It's the last night of Mardi Gras. Mm-hmm. It's going to go into the morning. I mean, mm-hmm. he doesn't know all of that. But he takes the chance. And it was well worth it, as you described in some of the themes and emotions. Not only was it the fact that he was able to experience this very different adventure, not that he expected to experience this kind of adventure within the adventure, but he met these great people. And I think he had probably gotten to the point where if they had asked him to you know, help with anything, whether or not it was saving Boy Scouts, I need to get that pile of wood, that cord of wood over there chopped up and put up for, you know, can you, would you mind helping with that? He would have done it. mm-hmm. you know, just to offer services in response to what they provided for him, which was mm-hmm. a place to eat and sleep for an evening. So I keep going back to what your son said. He doesn't have any bad things happen to him. How is this a hero's journey when he doesn't have any bad things happen to him? These are all good things. And maybe that's the purpose. I don't know necessarily that if you're writing a coming of age story, that they all have to be bad. It was bad when it started. He was not in a good place. And these are all opportunities. I think if we had written more negativity into it, not that he didn't experience negativity, he was a teenager in the 1960s, for gosh sakes. But if we had written more negativity into it, I'm not sure you could call it a coming of age story. The hero's journey has its ups and downs. But I think for this young man, he starts in a place where he's already down. Right. Mm. Anything negative that would have happened. And there's plenty of negative things that happen when he's in New Orleans. Right.
Yeah.
He does have some of those, and he survives them. But the trip there, I think that we wrote it in a positive experiential way was good for the story. Mm. And it was good for him because he was growing emotionally. He was growing. His sensibility was growing. He was having more respect for his mother along the way. He was, you know, so he was developing in a positive way. And I think the negativity that occurs in the negative part of the story that occurs in New Orleans really wasn't the kind of negativity that you could say, oh, well, that just ends his life there. You know, I think he was, my sense is, and we'll have to have our listeners and viewers tell us what they think about, I think, as he was writing back to Santa Fe, am I giving some of this away? As he was writing back to Santa Fe, he could look back and say that was a good trip, you know, mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, that was a negative trip. And I think in my opinion and my experience, that sensibility, the fact that you can look at a period in time in which you experience something different, and there was good things and bad things. I mean, you know, he almost lost his life, literally. There's good things and bad things, and you can look back on it and say, okay, that was, I would do that again, or I would go back there again, or I would behave in that way again. And I recall a lot of the things that we did over the past year as we traveled around New Mexico. Nothing, of course, was dramatically bad, but we had, they didn't save the hotel room for us, or they didn't do this, or we went to the wrong town, or this isn't where, you know.
Birds didn't show up till the sun went down.
Yeah, or the birds didn't show up. But I remember on the drive back, it was always like, yeah, that was a good trip. I never walked away from any of them, drove back from any of them, thinking to myself, man, that was a big waste of time.
Oh, well, and I feel like we started off with saying, you know, well, Miguel was all about himself. Uh-huh. I don't like this place. I'm out of here. I'm going to go take this motorcycle and I'm going to go to New Orleans, and it's all about me.
And nobody cares about me.
Give me money, yeah. And give me stuff. And you know, not that he's, you know, greedy or anything, but it was all about him. And he didn't worry about, what the brothers are going to think, or what his mother's going to think, or, you know, how anybody's going to mm-hmm. worry about him. So when we get here and he says, I need to do something for these scouts, because I've been, you know, in situations where people helped me, I want to help them. I want to pay it forward. I want to help these boys who need help, obviously. And it's, you know, it gives us that feeling that, oh, okay, he's starting to grow up. He's starting to think more about people besides himself. He's being a little less selfish and more selfless. He, you know, and he's not just doing it to impress Kate and John, because she offered twice for him to say no, just say no, you can go, you don't have to do this. And he said, no, I want to. And I think, you know, he didn't feel any pressure to stay from her. It was all about what he thought was the right thing to do.
The right, and perhaps even for him, the good thing to do. He mentioned his favorite word, abandonment. as the Boy Scouts were driving off. And I wondered if he felt like, am I abandoning here? Am I leaving Kate and John and these Boy Scouts in a bad situation? And I think that was part of it. You know, he's always looked at abandonment from his perspective and how he believes that the entire world has abandoned, his entire world has abandoned him. And here he has to decide, well, do I finish my trip, the one that I planned, the, you know, and he had, there was all the logic was in place for him to say, yeah, you're right. I'm going to get on my bike. I'll see you guys later. But wouldn't that have been his own form of abandonment? Mm. Not only abandoning these two people that invested their time in him, that gave him a place to sleep, that fed him, those Boy Scouts that were, they weren't like necessarily dangerously lost. They just couldn't figure out how to get back. So he had the opportunity to get a sense of the potential for abandonment and what makes people do that. And what makes people do that is they, as usual, have to make one of two choices. You're always presented with the yin and the yang of the situation, and you're provided the opportunity to make the choice. And would he have grown any more had he chosen to ride off into the sunshine? I guess, not sunset. The answer is no. By staying there, by not abandoning the situation, he grew into himself a little bit more, was made more aware of what abandonment means, still got his opportunity to use the word. You know, it's his favorite accusatory word, is the victim, that victim word, you know.
I think that's a good point, is the victim is, I'm a victim. Mm-hmm. The best way to stop feeling like a victim is to help somebody else, mm-hmm. is to understand what their problems are, yeah. how you can be of help to somebody who is worse off than you. Mm-hmm. And that's the best way to feel better about yourself, mm-hmm. to feel better about your life and where you're at in life. The moment you take your eyes off your own problems and start looking outward, mm-hmm. at other people and what they're going through and how you can be of help, that's when you suddenly feel better. You feel more confident. You feel like, you know, you find your place in the world.
You know, I am reminded from what you just said, excuse me. I'm reminded, and you've heard me say these things, that my father had a couple of sayings that he would use all the time. If he saw someone on the street that was in some form of destitution, he would say, but for the grace of God, go I. You know,
and you say that too. I hear you say it all the time.
And I think it's his way of reminding himself how good his life is, mm-hmm. and that he needs not, that he doesn't have any right to be feel victimized, yeah. that there are people in these situations. And I think that's what gave him such a big heart. His other favorite one that my mother, I know, didn't particularly care for. I used to complain about having no shoes. And this was a man who wore, you know, brown and black wingtipped. I don't remember him in anything else, you know. I used to complain about not having a nice pair of shoes until I saw a man with no feet. And my mother would go, oh my, do you have to use that? You know, things like, but it was like that.
Saying.
And I think it was that sense that there were people in the world that were less fortunate than he, and that he had not only the necessary tools, personal tools, to be able to get himself through life. But he grew up with a good family, a loving family and a caring family, and a family that provided him things, that gave him that opportunity to go to college and, you know, leave him in a position where he can take over the car dealership. So I you have to look at it from that perspective. You're only as abandoned as you believe yourself to be. Mm-hmm. And that the moment you get the opportunity to help someone else, to accomplish something else by helping someone else, then that sense of abandonment goes away. You don't think about your own, what kind of victim you are, you get to think about what kind of victim other victims other people are and how you can help them. So I think.
Yeah. And also it gives Miguel a chance to feel less alone and more a part of a community. First, he's helping John with, you know, getting the horses ready and going on that trail ride. And then they get to know each other better. And he gets that one-on-one time with John. And then he gets to feel like a hero because he goes back to the cabin and he shares the message that people are waiting for. And then again, makes that decision to be a part of that community that's doing something positive and helping those scouts who are lost, you know, and they're all like praising him and happy that he's part of it. So how could you not want to be a part of, you know, some kind of a community that's just welcoming you and saying, yes, we're happy to have you and come ride with me in the lead truck. And, you know, thanks for, you know, doing this with us. And how would you not want to be a part of that?
So the other thing that it gives you is an opportunity as you go from boy to Eagle Scout. One of the things that you have to do is stand up in front of the group and tell them why you think you deserve this, why you think you deserve this award, and the honor of becoming an Eagle Scout. And so now, and the idea is you reflect on the things that you've accomplished as a scout. reflect on them, not only by telling the story, but what you gained from them, what you learned from them. And you have to stand up and be able to say that. Now you have all your badges, you have all the investment in time and all the camping trips, etc. But what you want to do is wow them with your own story. One that's just like this, where it wasn't part of the rigor of getting to that point from Boy Scout to Eagle Scout. This was, you know, the best stories that I used to hear were from scouts who, I don't want to say they went outside the lines of scouting, because it is very, it's like being in the military, right? You get the badges, you do the badges, you get the badges. When you get to so many badges in so many years, you can apply to become an Eagle Scout. The Eagle Scouts that are already there have an approval process that they go through to determine. But the best ones that I heard as they used to go up and do these presentations were the ones that said, I probably never mentioned this before and I didn't get a badge for it, but my brother and I went camping for 2 weeks up in northern New Mexico, and we stayed up there and we did a survival scenario just for the fun of it. And I think that was part of what he
putting your skills to use in the real world is of course more valuable than just I did what I had to do to get this badge, you know.
and when somebody would say, you know, for that particular age group, for that particular period, if somebody were to say to you, when are you going to get a job, or, you know, I remember it was like everybody I knew had some kind of job or another. You were either mowing lawns or you were working at the grocery store or something. It was just common. And these were all tools that prepared you for that kind of social interaction, because that's what getting into work is. And then of course it increases as you learn more social interaction as a result of working. Well, I'm going to get into storytelling here. I don't want to do that.
Well, that's what we're about.
One of the most pleasing things, I remember working as in a grocery store as a bag boy, the Safeway store downtown. I would ride my bicycle in the snow, you know. But I remember doing that, and I remember getting the greatest pleasure from shoppers that would recognize me with a little badge, right? And I was Mike. Right. It wasn't Toby then, because I used my middle name. And shoppers, I'd bag their groceries and they'd say, Mike, how are you doing? Good job. You know, I like the way you bag your groceries, kind of thing. And it was always like, well, that was, you know, fun. You know, it was bagging groceries and I'm getting paid. I don't know, it's $1.25 an hour, I think. But back then they could tip you. So if you put the groceries in the bag, you put in the cart, you walk them out to their car and you help them put the groceries in the car, they could tip you. And you go like, oh, okay, I've done a little change in my thing. But it was that social interaction. I think the importance of getting out and meeting people and the members of your family or your close friends and experiencing, you know, the nature of society. You know, it's one thing to be out in nature and running away from bears. It's another thing to be in the nature of the social of society and the and socialization. And I think that's good. I think that's good. And I think these are some of the lessons that he got. The, you mentioned community and support. And I know you see it slight. As a matter of fact, when you see that, what are your thoughts on this chapter in terms of community and support?
Well, I think I covered that already, but you know, that they welcomed you and you wanted to be a part of that community because they were all about helping people. Uh-huh. And that was appealing, uh-huh. you know, to you. I think it is to most people who feel like helping people is the best thing in the world to do, you know, because it makes you feel good about yourself, gives you more confidence, uh-huh. gives you a chance to practice those skills that you've learned, and it shows you where you belong in the world. So, yeah, that's...
I remember, I don't know how long it lasted, but for a short period of time, I thought to myself, you know what, I'd like to be a park ranger, because I always saw it as a... half the time you're just enjoying nature in these beautiful parks, and half the time you're protecting people. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think being park ranger would be, the National Park Service, when it comes to their ranger, I remember reading a statistic that they have the longest lived, you know, rangers. They stay on as long until they tell them, okay, you got to go now, buddy. You know, retire for us. But they, yeah. I think it's because it's such a great job of the combination of being in a beautiful park out in nature and helping people.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then we talked about selflessness and some of the emotions include courage, camaraderie, empathy, determination, and a sense of purpose. Uh-huh. I think that sense of purpose is extremely important. You had a goal, but there wasn't a whole lot of purpose to it other than I'm going to go to this place and see this thing, which is fine. It got you out and on your trip. But having that sense of purpose, I'm going to help these people who need my help, mm-hmm. that is a very uplifting sense of purpose. And it's something that we all long for, I think, you know, when we don't have, I don't know what my purpose is. I don't know what I'm here for. You know, we search for it until we can find something that gives us that.
I think part of it was that getting attention is not the equivalent of a sense of purpose. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the trip, a significant part of the trip at the beginning was, this is going to get me some attention, right? I'm going to take off. My mom's going to have to worry about it. Brother Benjamin's going to have to worry about it. Uncle Carlo's not going to worry about it, but, you know, it gets some attention.
Yeah.
Instead of what you just described as a sense of purpose. Those are two different things. Mm-hmm. And I think this chapter is a recognition on his part that a sense of purpose outweighs the getting a sense of getting attention is not a valid sense of purpose.
Oh.
Right? It's just getting attention. And there's a broad variety of ways to get attention, some of them good, some of them bad, and you hope you don't cross the line of the bad ones. At least some people do, but sometimes that's what they do. Yeah. Sense of purpose is a stronger motivating factor because there is accomplishment in that. Getting attention is not something that you could measure by a level of 0 to 1 to 10 in terms of accomplishment. It's someplace between 0 and 1. Accomplishing, having a sense of purpose and accomplishing that, now you can start ranking on 5, 6, 7. And I think that's when you have that recognition in life, the difference between a 2-year-old who has no sense of purpose is just about getting attention versus a 12-year-old who starts thinking about, well, wait a minute, what if I do the science fair? Not only do I get attention, but I have something that I accomplished. I've learned more about science. I satisfy my teacher's needs. It's competition. You know, I learn more about whatever topic I've done. So I think once we grow out of that, I just need attention. And it can happen at 5, 7, at this point, it probably happened at age 15. It's not just about getting attention. It's about accomplishing something. The ride to New Orleans could certainly be rated as accomplishing something, but it's not the recognition or the realization of achieving something purposeful.
Well, I think the getting attention feels good for a short time.
Yeah.
But having fulfillment because you have that purpose and you're going after it, I'm going to be helpful. I know how to ride a horse. I can do that. I can help look for these Boy Scouts. I can do that. I have a sense of purpose. I want to see this through. I want to see that these boys are, feel safe. That will give me fulfillment. I will have achieved that purpose. So that sense of purpose is more of an internal reward rather than an external reward like attention.
Mm-hmm. And it's once you realize the positive feeling that you get from it, from achieving your purpose, right? Accomplishing what you set out to do, the feeling that you get, what is that, the chemicals that are released in your brain?
Dopamine
and those serotonin. Things. I think there's a lot of that.
Oxytocin.
While just getting attention always results, as we've talked about this in the past, always results in a hangover. Like, man, I wish I hadn't done that. Or did I really need to do that? Or man, I feel I don't feel as good about all of that as I thought I would. Mm. While sensing that feeling that sense of purpose has all the chemical benefits of achieving that. So
yeah, it's an internal thing.
Yeah,
for sure. Of course, courage. I think there was courage. I mean, I don't think it was courage for you to go out in the forest and ride a horse. You knew how to do that. Uh-huh. But the courage was, I'm going to put my own needs and desires on hold and do what seems to be more important right in this moment. I'm going to take care of the urgent need of others rather than focus on my own desires. Uh-huh. And that, I think, takes courage. It takes saying no to yourself, to your selfish desires, and saying yes to what the universe has put in your lap.
As usual, I think it goes back to making choices. Mm-hmm. And you're always going to get the opportunity to choose. I don't think it's necessarily courageous to make a choice, one choice over the other. I think it comes from the ability to rationally evaluate the result, the potential result of making those choices, and then taking the one that seems more rational than the other.
Yeah.
Now, these actually weren't extreme choices. It's not the difference between, hey, you can go help the Boy Scouts, or you can find a bottle and get drunk behind the bar. Right. That wasn't the choice. That's it was more complex than that. And that he had to consider a lot of the elements of each of the choices. And I think when you say it was the courage to make the harder of the two choices, mm-hmm. at that point.
Yeah.
Had it been on his way back from New Orleans, it might have been an easier choice, assuming that's how it had gone. Right. Mm-hmm. Because he achieved as he got to got the attention.
Goal was finished.
Right. The goal was finished, so he could do other things. But the fact that he hadn't achieved that, and he was putting that at risk. Imagine if he had gotten there on Ash Wednesday, the morning of Ash Wednesday, when the town is dead, and the only thing that you're going to find is dump trucks cleaning up the mess. You know,
and people going to church to get their ashes.
Right, exactly. So I think there was a certain amount of courage in making the choice, not knowing that it was actually I'll use the word spiritually, internally beneficial for him in the long run. So I think it was a healthy choice. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a good and healthy choice.
Well, I'm trying to think, based on that, if I have shown courage in the last couple of months, just talking about selling the house and it needs work, and do I do the work? Do I pay for the work? And am I going to get the money back out? And then, I can also think about, who's going to live in this house? Do you think it's going to be a flipper? Do you think it's going to be some corporation that buys it and rents it? Or what do you think? And I think it's going to be a family. And if it's going to be a family, then they're going to need these things to be comfortable in this house. So I want to make sure those things are in place for them, you know, so that if they come in there with their three kids and a baby, that they have a place that's safe and comfortable from day one, instead of, you know, oh, now we have to fix everything, you know. So that's the choices that, you know, I can look at as well. You know, there's always going to be those choices. Do I go the easy route and the cheap route and just say, I don't want to do it? Or do I do the harder thing and, you know, go through all of the process of getting things fixed and up to code and, you know, comfortable and nice for the next family?
So the only word I would argue with in that entire thing was the hard thing. What you're finding out is the perception of how hard it is comes from never having done it before. But yeah, each time, and each time you do it, it becomes progressively less hard to take those steps. You know, running around today, the whole time I was running around, you were talking to people about installing evaporative cooler, about what to do about the damage that's inside the house, calling the roofing guy, getting that straightened out. So each activity that you take on like this makes it progressively less hard than the next one. And as I watch from the sidelines, I recognize that this has been a growth and evolutionary experience for you. You're getting better each time, and you may or may not have to do this at any time in the future, but the experience of just doing it this time is going to make it. And I know last night we were having a conversation and you said something like, oh, it's just so hard. And everything's a thing. And you know, you were complaining but you were expressing how the frustration of having to do all this stuff. You know,
yeah, and that takes a month to get less than $200 out of the insurance company. To try to pay for fixing the roof.
So here's the lesson, right? The lesson is, if the house burns down or gets blown over by a hurricane, call the insurance company. Otherwise, don't waste your damn time. don't waste a month. You know, just pay for it, get it done, or do it yourself. Right. That was the lesson.
I talked to friends and they said their roofs were damaged by weather. Yeah. They called the insurance company and the insurance company paid for a new roof. Yeah. I'm like, great, let me try that.
Well, I guess the question we should have asked was, how long did all of that take?
Yeah.
You know,
well,
it didn't happen overnight. I'm sure they had to go through the same thing, but we learned a valuable lesson. Mm-hmm. You know, I started thinking to myself of all that money that I've paid hundreds of thousands of dollars in my lifetime in insurance, monthly insurance payments. And you go like, well, when can I use this? This ought to be a reasonable time to use it. And I was talking to our friends, mm-hmm. Nathan and Rosalinda today. I was telling her about the insurance company experience, and I was listening to the guy talking to you on this as we were listening on the speaker. And I thought to myself, I already know what this guy is about to say. And honestly, it sounds kind of smarmy to me. Why don't you just get to the point? And the point was, yeah, I'm not going to give you anything. Yeah. You know, yeah. Your house didn't burn down, so I can't give you anything.
Yeah.
So it was a valuable lesson for me too.
Yeah, you know? Me too. Don't go back to farmers. There, I said it.
There, you said it. Got it out. See,
I feel better now.
Oh, I do. I was going to make another point.
Okay.
The other point is, I don't know if you recall, but there was a day sometime in July where you walked in and say, I'm going to sell my house. Why don't you sell your house and let's move to South Carolina? Like,
I think that was a while back, July, but okay.
Whenever it was. And I thought to myself, well, that is pretty courageous just to lay that all out there as if we needed to think about it a little bit more or, you know, have the conversation. But I thought to my, as you mentioned, progress and what you're doing in terms of self-improvement and having the courage to walk in, look me in the eye and say that, I thought, I'm impressed. And it was easy. Well, it hasn't been easy. I mean, I've had to make a lot of, I'm having a more difficult time buying things than you are in this case.
And here you've already sold your house.
Yeah.
Like, geez, I still have to do a lot of work before I can even get there. So
but I think in that sense where you looked at yourself and you said, I want to do this, and you weren't doing it to get attention. You were doing it because you saw an opportunity and you want to take advantage of that opportunity. Let's do it, you know?
That's not the only reason.
Well, no. What is the other reason?
Because I want you to be very happy. And I know that this is going to do it when we're surrounded by little babies. Because that is your favorite thing in the world, is to be around little babies.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that's true. That's true. I just hope they keep having more, you know.
Well, either way.
Because then they grow up and they're teenagers and you don't see them anymore.
Well, yeah, that's possible. Hmm. But
well, maybe
there are so many of them that we'll be surrounded by them for a while.
I hope so.
And that's something that I knew that you, whether you did anything about it or not, I knew that you want that.
So. Well, what I did is every year I'd take 3 weeks and I'd go visit different, you know, 1 week there, 1 week there, and 1 week there. The only reason I didn't do it this summer is because we were all in Spain together.
Yeah, you went to Spain instead.
So,
which is good.
I think it's good. I'm looking forward to it.
You know, it's good to call them on the phone and have the FaceTime with them, but it'll be even better when you can just say, why don't you all come over, or we're coming over, or
let's
get together and do something this weekend. You know, we're not doing anything this weekend. What about you? Oh, let's get together. How fun will that be?
Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So it's all worth it in the end. All this pain of dealing with insurance companies and fixing up houses and all the stuff we have to go through to sell our houses so we can move. It's all worth it.
You guys don't see what's behind us that looks like a nice house. That's actually a green screen. I'm going to have to figure out how to paint over that green screen.
It's not that hard to paint. Anyway, I think we have pretty much covered this chapter, and we've been at this for a little while. So I think it's a good time to talk about the blog. For those of you who don't know, I take all the material that we talk about each week, disseminate it into sections of what we discussed, and you know, add to it a little bit and provide quotes from the book and quotes from our show. And I create a blog post each week. You can find that blog post either if you go to my LinkedIn page or if you go to blog.agkmedia.studio, you'll get to go to our WordPress blog. We also have a website where I put the blog as well. So every week I have it in three different places so that it's easier to find. Or you can just Google, you know, our story, your story, and you'll find it. But I hope that you will take the time to investigate that blog, because it adds to what we've talked about. It gives you a little bit more, you know, thought. And at the end, I always have three action steps that you can take that week. Simple things like, you know, calling a friend or writing down your goals, just simple things that you can do that week to really focus in on the themes and emotions that are contained in this week's episode. So I hope that you'll check that out.
I agree with her.
Do you have anything else you want to say?
No, I've said, haven't I talked enough?
Oh, okay. Well, apparently Toby's talked enough for today. And we are looking forward this week to going to the Cosmic Campground to see the sky as the new moon goes over in September. And hopefully the weather will be good for us. It's been a little iffy right now, but
we've been planning this trip for a month and the monsoon decided to charge in.
if Miguel can take an adventurous trip, but that's, so can we.
So here's the deal. Like I said, every trip that we've taken in the past several years, we always come back going like, oh, it rained for 3 days and there were no clouds and I never took out the astro photography equipment. But man, that was a fun trip.
Yeah.
That's how I remember.
There's always going to be something that you get out of it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we're going to go. We're going to have a good time.
Rain or
and
not.
We'll tell you more about it next week.
So,
yeah. Thanks for joining us today. And we hope that you enjoy this story of the Lost Boys and Miguel helping to find them and how he's finding himself in the process.
Was that a goodbye?
Thanks for listening to Our Story, Your Story. We hope you enjoyed hearing our stories and those of our guests. We invite you to share your own stories with us by emailing us at stories@agkmedia.studio. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss any future episodes. Until next time, keep telling your story because your story matters.